This episode is brought to you by First Response. First Response recognizes that not all pregnancies are the same, and neither is the road to get there. The First Response brand is fervently committed to supporting, sharing, and empowering all pregnancy journeys and providing accurate information, especially to those struggling with infertility, loss of a baby, and maternal health inequities. With a variety of tests that detect pregnancy hormones early and often, First Response is there for you every step of the way. All First Response pregnancy test products are available for purchase at all major retailers in-store and online. Be sure to pick one up today. A quick note before we get into the episode, Oversharing is a podcast for entertainment purposes only. It is not a medical podcast and does not constitute medical or psychological advice. Always seek the advice of your physician or mental health professional. Hello and welcome back to Oversharing. I'm Jordana Abraham.
And I'm Dr. Naomi Bernstein. Hey, Joe.
How's it going? We took a week off, just not like from the podcast airing, but from recording. So I do feel like I've missed you. I haven't seen you in a couple
of weeks. I know. I missed you too. I've been getting very used to seeing you every week and doing our catch up. So yeah, I missed you. I went to a retreat with my fifth grader, a 2-day field trip away, sleeping in, I was on the top bunk of this bunkhouse.
Oh, wow.
You know, I'm very non-confrontational. So yeah. All the moms got, it was like a mom's room and all the moms got in and I'm just kind of like moseying, like, you know, like appreciating. I went over to the lake. I'm like taking a look. We had a lakefront cabin, which was really nice. It was $200
nice
for two nights. Yes, exactly. Okay. Nice guys finish last. So I walk in and I, obviously all the bottom bunks are taken. So I'm, and the ladder's like 6 to 10 inches away from the wall. So I'm like not wanting to climb up and down this thing, like scratching my back against the wall, getting up into this bunk. So it was a real like summer camp kind of experience.
The other moms are probably like, give that woman the top bunk. She meditates. Yeah. She's not going to give a shit.
Yes. Very true.
But I guess if you don't mind, then like, you know, you don't. That's funny because like, I guess sometimes you're kind of like, you just want it on principle. You're like, well, why should I have to have the top? But that's almost like the opposite of the meditative mindset, right?
I was like, all right, this isn't ideal. I'll lean into it. You know, I'll be stuck up here in my meditation. Maybe I'll meditate a little longer because I don't have the guts to come down, scratch my back against this spider webby wall on the way down.
Really living in the moment.
Yeah.
And then you probably get more grateful when you're done with the trip and you can go home and be in your real bed.
For sure. Yeah.
I thought you'd be very proud of me. I meditated 5 days of the week last week.
Good job.
Monday through Friday.
That's awesome.
Every morning, I did a 10-minute meditation. I was like so proud of myself.
Very cool. So what did you, do you want to share what you used? Was it like an app or?
Yeah, I have the Calm app, which I traditionally really only mostly used for like sleep stuff.
Sleep sounds.
In the past,
I have a funny sleep sound story just to digress for a second. So
yeah.
So all the moms are in this room in this bunkhouse and we're about to go to sleep. And one of the moms is like, you know, I really like to sleep with white noise. So the rest of the moms yeah, like white noise.
Oh, they're just into that. Everyone was, okay.
Yeah, they wanted white noise, like background noise. Mm-hmm. So all the rest of the moms are like, yeah, white noise, that sounds great. She's like flipping through some white noise options. Everyone's like in their bunks. And so she turns on this, it's called Brownian noise. I think it's on the Calm app. It's like a white noise, but like a little bit like softer.
Soothing.
So a little bit, not so like TV static. So she turns it on. At the same time, all the moms are like, oh, yes, that's it. That's the one. Like everyone just suddenly at the same moment got this like, almost like arousal sense of like, yes, our sleep is going to be wonderful. I was like, this is pretty pathetic that like finding the exact right pitch of white noise is what's getting all of these like 40-year-old women to get excited before bed. So I did feel a kinship with our love for sleep and our curated sleep experience with all these moms in the cabin. So I thought that was funny. Little moment.
Group meditation does definitely, I feel like, bring you together. I've been to like classes in person where like everyone's like sitting on their own pillow and those definitely feel like a lot more immersive.
Yes.
So I could see that. Next time you're in New York, I'll take you to one of those. They have like those meditation centers that are like a whole like room with a soundscape. It's like high tech.
Yes.
which is like fun. But then you're kind of like, oh, did I just pay $35 to sit in a quiet room?
Right. That I could have done totally by myself in my own apartment for free.
No, I think it is a cool thing to do every now and then. Obviously, it's tougher to do every day. But I've done the sleep stuff when I couldn't fall asleep to try to help me. But this is the first time I think I've done consistent morning meditations, not for sleep, 10 minutes. And the nice thing about like a calm has like this like daily meditation thing.
The daily just, like, calm. Change. I like
yeah,
it.
Yeah, the daily calm. Yeah.
Yep.
And then it's nice because you do, it's probably only like five or, I mean, I have no idea because I'm not looking at it while it's going, but it seems like it's like a little intro and then like 5 or 6 minutes of like the quiet meditation. And then it ends with like a little nice little message.
Yeah.
Like an nice
inspirational
little, like,
kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. Either an inspirational to something or just like kind of like a reflection on like do it, like some sort of like tendency or mm-hmm. a suggestion for pausing. And I don't know. I have been sleeping better this week. I don't know if it's from that. Tough to say,
right.
But it felt very nice. So I'm going to try to keep doing it. I like forgot to do it in the weekend because, you know, you have less of like a structured routine.
Right. The routine is off. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was a pretty good, strong start. I'm going to try to keep doing it. I'll keep
that's awesome. I actually have tried the daily calm and it's nice because it's 10 minutes, which is doable. And her voice right. is nice. And there are these little topics that you can kind of think about it and then you can pull it into the rest of your day, whatever it is. So I think that's where a lot of the benefit lies, is like setting the tone for the rest of your day when you're starting. I love starting off with a morning meditation.
Yeah, for sure. This is not sponsored, by the way.
Yeah.
But yeah. It is a good resource. And it should be if you're listening and you work for Calm.
Summer is just around the corner, so it's time to say goodbye to those jackets and sweaters and hello to shorts and dresses. I wanted to refresh my wardrobe for the warmer weather without spending a fortune. Luckily, I found Quince. Now I have a lineup of timeless pieces I want that will keep me looking fresh year after year. As the summer's rolling in, I just bought a beautiful pair of linen pants. They are so comfy. I'm going to go back and get one in every color. I can wear them to work. I can wear them out. They are super luxury quality. I'm obsessed. Quince has amazing items like premium European linen dresses, blouses, and shorts from $30, washable silk tops, timeless 14-karat gold jewelry, and so much more. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman by partnering directly with top factories and passes that savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, so you can feel good about what you're wearing on every level. Get warm weather ready with Quince. Go to quince.com/oversharing for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/oversharing to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/oversharing.
Our first overshare is a voicemail. If you want to leave us a voicemail, we get like a lot of really good voicemails. So if you are an auditory person, you can call our voicemail number, which is 646-363-6294, and leave a voicemail. Or if you prefer to write in a little, we're obviously anonymous. We don't share any names or anything. It's probably a little bit more anonymous to write an email than have your voice on, which I respect. So if you want to write an email instead of a voicemail, you can email oversharing@betches.com. But let's get into it. Should we play this week's voicemail?
Yeah, let's hear it.
Hello, big fan of the podcast. I'm just calling because my boyfriend and I just moved cross country, which is super exciting and we love it. But ever since we moved, his mom thinks it's okay to text me to ask questions that he doesn't want to answer her. And I have no idea how to tell her to stop doing it. Definitely think we need to set a boundary, but I don't want to be mean because I do really love her and we have already been together 5 years. Definitely think of her as mom already, but I can't with all these questions about has he bought his plane ticket or when he quit his job or whatever. It just feels like I'm going behind his back to talk to his mom. I mean, well, thank you.
I really like this question. I also feel like because this episode comes out the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, I mean, I do a lot of podcasts and I read a lot of emails, and I do see a trend around this time of year of like family boundary, you know, right. all the negative things that come with the holidays, which is like interacting with other people's families yes. and kind of like dealing with your with how to be polite, but also not be miserable the entire time. This is obviously not holiday related, but I think it still speaks
it's probably
to that
coming up maybe because of. You know, she's going to have to see her and like be responsible for whatever reaction she gives to these text messages. It's much easier to set boundaries from afar, I think, than it is when you're going to actually be face to face. But yeah, this right. is a funny one. I think it's pretty common that sometimes she's not married yet, but that there is this kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Like a new pathway to get to the child through the significant other. You know, it's here. I found a weak link that I can kind of, you know, tap into here to get the information that I need.
And that person sort of more has to be more polite probably yes. than your own kid.
Right. Like it sounds like he's just literally ignoring her maybe.
Right.
I don't know what's going on with him, but it sounds like he's just not answering his mom. And then she's texting the girlfriend, which I could see. You know, I've had little bitty interactions like this where I don't know if you've ever had anything where like Mike's mom tries to get some information or have a conversation that Mike might not want to have, but you might be more open to having.
I would say this is something I actually can't relate to. I feel like his family has more boundaries than I've ever. No one does anything to make anyone feel uncomfortable. It's like a little That's, weird to me. Like,
and that is exactly why I married him.
Yeah, no one asks. No one asks any sort of like personal questions, which they think could make you uncomfortable. No one texts right. you randomly with right. anything crazy. It's a very well boundaried family, I would say. Almost sometimes, and again, love his family. Almost too boundaried,
right? Right. But
one could argue.
Right. That's funny. So, yeah, I mean, I think to me, the obvious answer here is to just say, hey, I'm not sure. Why don't you text, you know, Mark and ask him?
Right. Well, what if it's like, when is his flight getting in? Like, I guess, and you know, I guess you could just say it, but I could see it's, she kind of wants to, she wants to make it a thing where she doesn't think that she can be. Keep texting her all these right. questions about him.
Yeah, I think she wants to set like a general boundary here. I do wonder if it's the mom's just trying to interact with the girlfriend just to kind of be like, hey, let's have a relationship. Or if it's really that she's not getting information from her son and she's trying to go behind his back to get it when he's not answering her within a period of time. There's not quite enough information here. I'm curious what the son's relationship with the mother is and why he's not talking to her or answering her. I think that's like a piece of the puzzle too.
I think kids often feel like pretty comfortable ignoring their parents. I do. Again, it's kind of like, oh, I know they're not going to like be, you know, I'm their kid. They're I don't
right.
really
I can abuse
to,
them and they will still love me.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, in that same way as like a friend where it's like, I feel like there's nothing more sort of ingrained, bad or good than like a parent-child relationship to where it's kind of like, unlike in a friendship, like if I was texting my friend and they weren't answering me, like we might not be friends anymore.
Right.
Whereas if my mom's texting me and I'm not answering, I don't feel like I'm really doing irreparable damage to the relationship. I'm kind of like, I can kind of do what I want.
Right. Which is an interesting conversation in and of itself of like, why do we feel like we can just treat our parents in a way and think that they're still going to, they just have to take it and they're going to be there like with bells on when we decide to come back, unless they're really not, unless she is, the mother is someone who's like not respecting his boundaries. So his boundary is just to not answer her. Perhaps right. we don't have the information. So I think one is to talk to her boyfriend about this and kind of say, you know, figure out why he's not answering her. And the best, you know, one option is to say, hey, and I've done this before where I'll be like, hey, your mom texted me this, just call her, you know, like,
right.
you jump in here and just answer this text and then I can ignore it because I've relayed the message that there's something she wants to talk to you about. You can call her and you can answer it. And then,
mm-hmm.
maybe like if she says, when is his flight getting in? And then you say, hey, your mom texts me. She wants to know when your flight's getting in. And then he sends her the message, my flight gets in at 8:30. Then she could probably just ignore it.
Right.
Or wait an hour and say, oh, did you ever hear from whatever?
Yeah, I think it's one of those scenarios where she doesn't want to set the precedent where like she's now doing that. Even if it's just like, I feel like those are specific examples of things that she could tell him to do. But it's more like, I generally don't want your mom texting me about you and like your whereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's two options there to me. It's like one is kind of just like eat shit and just kind of answer. Because like, right. And just do it to avoid the confrontation, which is, to be totally honest, probably the route I would take unless it was like the middle of the night or like extremely constant or like actually interfering with my day.
Right. Well, one of them was, is he going to quit his job? Is that what she said?
Did he quit his job?
I couldn't really hear that part, but I think so. That's kind of not my conversation to have with right. You know?
Yeah.
When does his flight get in? That's fine. Maybe you answer right. that one because it's cut and dry.
Well, that's how you set the boundary, I guess. The boundary is like, if the person's asking a message about something that's like sort of just like public knowledge, then I'll answer that. Right. If the person's asking a question about something that's a little bit more like personal, then I think she could respond to that with like, maybe you should talk to whatever her husband's name or her boyfriend's name is yes. about that. Like, I wouldn't feel comfortable like sharing that without speaking to him.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a great way to kind of delineate, you know, if it's kind of very specific information, what day are you guys coming? When are you leaving? You know, whatever, that type of stuff, great, answer it. But if it's something that you know your boyfriend's avoiding talking to her about, like, did he quit his job? I think it's, you know, that would be a nice opportunity to just say, hey, I think it's better if you ask him. I don't know all the details, or I don't feel comfortable talking on his behalf or something like that.
Yeah.
But I do think she probably at some point is going to need to say something. And if she does go like big picture, say something, I think it's probably best to have an actual either phone conversation or an in-person conversation instead of getting into a text conversation about like the general, please stop doing this thing.
Yeah. This voicemail didn't have a ton of information, but what I do hear a lot, especially on YouUp, and we got one recently about this actually, and Jared and I had very different opinions on how to handle it, was the common theme, and the details don't really matter, of like the woman saying, your family treats me how I consider it to be like poorly. I don't like the way they either speak to me or I don't like the way that this sort of infraction that they've done to me. And then the husband saying, well, that's just kind of like who they are.
Mm.
So I feel like you get some, that's probably a very common theme, especially if someone who's maybe like less confrontational, where it's like the person wants the person with the whose family is doing the negative thing to defend them.
Right.
And the other person is so used to that either they don't really see it as a big deal or they're non-confrontational and don't want to deal with that. Do you get that a lot, I would assume, in couples therapy as it relates to in-laws?
I do. And I think sometimes it's like you pointed out, and oftentimes like in an early relationship or an early engagement or an early marriage, there's like this loyalty thing. Who are you going to mm-hmm. pick? Is it me or them? Are you leaning into our new life and our set of values and our way of doing things? Or are you going to stay stuck in your family of origin? So I think sometimes it takes on this like symbolic, bigger picture mm-hmm. symbolic thing of like, are you with me or are you with them? And kind of creating a situation where the other person is sort of forced to choose, which then can make you feel safer in the moment. I think if you're having
right.
those early relationship fears of like, are you going to stay stuck and try to suck me up into your family? Or are we going to create our own thing? I don't know if that makes sense.
No, it does. And I feel like you see that as a recurring thing, even in like TV and movies. I mean, I'm watching The Crown, which is about like the royal family. It's obviously like probably the most drastic example of that, of yes. like, you're not going to have like William and Kate, like, oh, we're just going to do our own thing. For like yes. that just wouldn't be able to, like, how that would be able to work for that kind of scenario. But most families obviously have like a slightly less
intense
hold,
right,
that kind of thing.
So yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it has to do with the bigger, like, early relationship stuff like this. I mean, this is a little different because I think this mother-in-law is just annoying her and trying to put her in the middle. But I think she is tapping into something of like, which dynamic are we leaning towards here? You know, like once you almost accept something early on, you feel like you're signing off on a relationship that you don't want to sign off on.
Right. Or like, are we listening? Is it like your mom's way of doing things or is it my way of doing things? You get that a lot too.
Oh yeah. That's big. Like the daughter-in-law, mother-in-law relationship is just so fascinating because it's like the female version of like the lion, like taking over the pride and like, you know, killing all the cubs from the other from the other lions and being like, this is my pride, you know?
Yeah.
But it's a very subtle, it's not like violent and it's not like physically aggressive, but there's a lot of these like passive aggressive, low level, like dominance, you know, displays of dominance between mother-in-law and daughter-in-law.
How do you usually help people navigate that?
I mean, ideally communication, right? Well, first of all, figuring out, like in the case that we're talking about, the other case that you were talking about on You Up, figuring out like, why do I care so much about this particular issue? Is this like, what's my ultimate fear? What am I really afraid of? I'm afraid that my mother-in-law is going to take over. I'm afraid that my husband's not going to be loyal to me. I'm afraid that he's, you know, whatever it is, like figuring out what your real fear is rather than letting yourself get swept up in the issue of the moment. You know, like trying to see the bigger picture of like, what is my fear? Okay, I really want to move to California and I'm afraid that my husband, if he's so enmeshed with his mother or if his mother has so much hold on our life that he's never going to want to leave or whatever the thing is for you, where you're kind of like, it's not about the fact that she came to my house and started decorating my mantle with her Christmas things. Like that's not really the issue. The issue is that she's like becoming this part of our life that I feel like we're not going to be able to disentangle from. So my first thing is saying, what am I really afraid of? So you can maybe figure out what the issue is. And sometimes it might be with your husband and not with your mother-in-law, perhaps. And then secondarily, being able to communicate around that to get your actual needs met instead of what I think a lot of people do is just get like chronically caught up in these like little bitty, you know.
It's the same fight in different ways.
Yes. And you have to figure out what the underlying issue is in order to disentangle from it. So.
Right. I guess you'd need more specifics.
Yeah, we need more of a specific example. But, you know, whatever. You know, there's so many things. Parenting brings up a lot of like mother-in-law, daughter-in-law stuff, you know. I remember when mom gave one of my kids like soft serve ice cream. Like, she's a big like vanilla Carvel fan. So I think one of the kids was like, you know, whatever it was, like 3 months old, and she's giving them like soft serve vanilla. And I was like, she really can't have that. She's like, well, it's just like breast milk. It's cream, it's dairy, and, you know, whatever it is. So that's the kind of thing where you're just like this protective instinct of like, I'm raising my child my way,
right?
Not your way. You know, so I realized that that's what it is. Are they going to die from like a teaspoon of soft serve ice cream? Probably not. You know, I'm not saying, you know, whatever. But like in the moment, it just kind of feels like I am not going to allow you to parent my child in your way. That's what it was for me, I think, when I got like worked up about the soft serve ice cream.
Well, yeah, it's like the principle of the, it's also like a respect thing. Like, do you respect that this is my domain that like you should ask? And I think boundaries make people with few boundaries very uncomfortable and probably defensive too.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So,
which sometimes makes them feel like really satisfying and like great. You know, it's kind of like I'm entitled to set my boundary, and I get this nice little revengeful side effect of the fact that it makes you very uncomfortable. Right. So I get to like upset you, and I also get to maintain my boundary, which feels nice. And that, you know, doesn't make for the best dynamic, but I think that there's this whole like kind of passive aggressive thing there where it's like, I'm entitled to set my boundary. This is my child and they will not be having ice cream. I know that that upsets you and I kind of enjoy that, you know?
Well, you can do whatever you want with your child, which you did. Right.
Right.
Yeah,
exactly.
I'm sure there's many episodes to be had on in-law boundaries.
Oh yeah. I'm definitely down to talk about some of that because it usually those, the reason why I like talking about those is there's usually some bigger picture underlying issue that can come up by examining these little nitpicky fights. Right.
Well, I guess, like, what's the husband's role in a lot of these things? Is it to not get involved and let the two of them figure it out on their own? Or is it to pick a side? Like, what do you feel like is...
Yeah, no, I think he needs to be a part of the conversation for sure. I think the first conversation is between him and his wife where he can decide, okay, what are you afraid of? Are you afraid that I'm going to, you know, what? Like, I think she needs to be able to express to her husband, like, what's your fear? What her fear is, let's say, I mean, whatever it is, like, I'm afraid that your mother's going to take over, or I'm afraid that, I don't know what it is, but I think if she can express it to him, and then he can say, okay, I understand that fear. How can I make you feel more secure? So she's not depending on the behavior of the mother-in-law. She's knowing, mm-hmm. she knows that she can get it from her husband, his reassurance, which should mean more than anything that the mother-in-law does. If she knows that they're a team together in terms of whatever the goals are that they're trying to achieve, or the independence that they're trying to get from their parents, because look, people get married, that time period is like a huge shift for the man and the woman. It's like, I'm leaving my, you might be living alone in an apartment in the city, but maybe your mom is, you know, still your go-to person for whatever it is until you meet your new person. So there's a huge shift. And I think sometimes what the woman wants to hear is like, I'm your number one. And you know, and so maybe just him.
Like, this is the primary group. That's the secondary, as opposed to the other way around.
Yes. Which is sad for the mother-in-law. I mean, I have a son. I understand at some point that's going to be sad, you know, that like.
Yeah, but do you want him to be doing what you want him to do? Or do you want him to be doing what his, I guess you're depends on what his wife says. Or his, you know, his husband, whatever.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah. You know, like, you have to let them fly, but there is. And so the mother-in-law needs to kind of lean on her husband too, to kind of be like, okay, this was the goal. The goal was to raise him up and have him be independent and have him go to, like, the mother-in-law needs to figure out what her fear. There's a whole set of emotions going on that side too.
Right.
I'm afraid he's not going to, you know, he's going to move away, or we're going to lose touch from him. Or, you know, if you can really get in touch with what the deeper fears are, you can skip all the nonsense about the whose house the holiday is at and what time you're showing up and whatever. What are you giving the baby? And did you listen to what I said? Are you following the schedule? That's all just symptoms of the bigger problem.
Right. I agree with that.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I've been to therapy for many years, spending a few nights alone with myself and my own thoughts before I am able to go out and recharge and connect with people is a huge part of what I learned to do in therapy. It's learning about myself, learning about what makes me tick, which isn't the same necessarily as someone else, and learning how to balance my own needs against the needs that I have for work or friendship or any kind of socializing. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/overshare today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/overshare.
All right, let's do a Betresis email. Hey, Jordana and Dr. Naomi, absolutely love the podcast. Been a longtime listener of All Things Betches podcast. This is my new favorite. I'll cut to the chase. I am a public school teacher in New York City, and I really do love my job. While there are many challenges, I really feel like I make a difference every day. The work-life balance I get to have as a teacher with summers off, vacation time, etc., is unmatched, and I love the challenge that comes with my day-to-day chaos. My husband, on the other hand, works a corporate job where he makes almost triple my salary, and recently he has been seriously talking about going back to school to become a teacher. She says this in all caps. He thinks his job is too much stress. He often does work late nights, and he feels he is not being fulfilled in his daily work. And he just thinks teaching will be the answer to all of his problems. He's like, I can teach them cool stuff, even be the school football coach, and it would be awesome. While I want him to be happy, the only problem I have with this is the money. While I want nothing more than to be a supportive wife and let him live out his dreams, I can't help but selfishly do not want him to go back to school, spend the next year or two living off my teacher salary while we're paying for grad school, and then have him start with a first year teacher salary, making a third of what he's making now. We are 31 and 32 years old. We talk about buying a house and starting a family soon. I feel terrible about not being supportive, especially being a teacher myself, but I know we would not be able to live the life we are living now if he really makes this change. I keep trying to talk him out of it, telling him that we can do more hobbies together to keep him fulfilled, but he is really stuck on this new idea. I would love to hear your thoughts, as I feel like I can't be fully honest with him without sounding like a money-hungry, unsupportive wife. Thanks so much, a betchy teacher. I thought this was a real interesting ethical conundrum here.
Totally. Totally. Well, first off, I want to give her credit because she's a teacher in New York City and she seems like she is loving it and she's giving off this impression to her husband that she's really happy with it. She's appreciative of her time
off. Don't talk it up so much.
Yeah, exactly. She's appreciative of her time off. She finds it challenging. Like, I know a lot of teachers that are like, oh, this is so hard. I feel underpaid and underappreciated and I have to do all this extra work. So I give her, first of all, a lot of credit for, you know, being grateful for the parts of her job that are good and giving off that impression that she's happy. And I'm sure he's kind of like, wow, you seem really happy. Maybe I would be happy too. So first of all, you know, is he the type of person that is going to be grateful and find the good things in it? Because there are behavior problems and you have to do a lot of grading after school. And there's definitely, you know, the grass is always greener type thing, but she is making it seem great, which I think is amazing. But a lot of people that are teaching do feel right. kind of tired and burnt out. And
yeah. And I could see why she also thinks it's kind of great, because she also has her income supplemented by someone who's
right.
Like, I would imagine the drawback of what she's describing is a great situation. Like she said, her salary is like a third of what her husband makes.
Right.
So I can understand why she's like, yeah, this is great, because like I do have like this buffer of that. And right. maybe it would be less great for both. I don't think she's wrong to say that his life or his change is only going to affect him. It's definitely going to affect her quality of life as well, based on
totally.
What she's saying.
And I think if you're doing this job that she's perceiving as great because she's, like you're saying, she's able to do it and still have financial security, it might not feel so great when you're doing it. And then you're also like stressed out about, okay, well, I have my summer vacation, but I can't go anywhere and I can't do anything because we don't have a lot of money and we're mm-hmm. paycheck to paycheck. So I think it is going to change the whole, like, I think a lot of teachers that do feel like burnt out and resentful are the ones that maybe don't have someone supplementing their income. So they're working and they're feeling fulfilled, but they're also able to do whatever they want on a teacher's yeah. salary.
And I can understand the idea of like, they are married already. I can understand the idea of like, I married you with sort of assuming that we were on the same page about lifestyle.
Bait and switch.
I mean, a little bit, or anything else. Like when you get married, I think, and this is probably a wrong assumption, but I assume when you get, I think at least for myself, when I got married, I was like, okay, this is the person that I'm marrying. This is kind of what I can expect of their work ethic, of their, like what they're bringing to the table financially, the lifestyle that they want. Is it in line with the lifestyle that I want? A bunch of different things. Not to say nothing changes. I mean, people change physically very totally. Often during marriage. I'm sure like people lose their jobs during marriage. You can't obviously 100% think that the person's always going to be who they are, but I can understand the expectation variation of like, oh, my life might be totally different with you than I thought it was going to be.
Right. 100%. The other part of this is that you don't really know him in a different scenario. You know, like she doesn't know sometimes if he is stressed out and he is working this job and maybe he's like, you know, cranky or irritable or not around or whatever, there might be parts of his personality that you know, I find, you know, and I'll just speak personally, in my relationship, I'm always very supportive of whatever my husband wants to do in terms of work or recreation or whatever, because when he's relaxed and happy and fulfilled, it's just like much better energy in the whole house. Like I personally would rather be married to someone who's going to come home happy and in a good mood and like positive and inserting positive energy into our home and have a little bit less money than someone who's like working and stressed and resentful and annoyed and tired when like every time they're not at work, they're just like tired and cranky, but we have a ton of money or more money. That's my personal preference because I think the energy is very contagious. So if someone's stressed out and unhappy, it's going to affect the household and our relationship much more negatively than I think not having money. That being said, I get what you're saying in terms of like if there is a lifestyle. So my recommendation would be for her to go to him and say, I want you to be happy. I want to be supportive. Here are my concerns. I'm anxious about the finances. We talk about buying a house. We talk about the things we want to do. And I'm concerned that we're not going to be able to have the lifestyle that we want. So I think the solution is to get out, you know, an Excel spreadsheet or whatever it is and just start crunching numbers. This is what it's going to look like. And maybe that would either give them both some confidence that, okay, this could work out. And maybe we have to buy a house for this much money instead of this much money. Or maybe once they start crunching numbers, he'll be like, you know what? I don't think this is really going to work out in reality once we sit down and iron out all the details. So talking about finances with your partners can be daunting.
Yeah.
But sometimes the actual facts of it, like sitting down and actually just like getting over the hump and crunching the numbers can just like, here's the answer, the reality of the situation. The rest of it is just kind of imaginary.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea because instead of say, I think if you leave it to like general lifestyle, that's where she might get into her fear of being seen as this like money hungry person. But if it's about like the practicality of an actual like financial goal that they have discussed, maybe yes. That's having kids or maybe that's getting married. It sounds a lot more like practical based than, you know, again, like making it all about the money. It's really about like what the money is going to get them for their lives.
Right. And things that something they both agree on, which is like if they both, you know, it's a different story if she's like, well, I like to be able to buy nice, expensive bags and shoes and whatever. That's not like a mutual goal, I would assume, for them. Or maybe that is, whatever it is. But whatever their mutual goals are, if it's house and kids, let's start writing it down. Okay, 2 years with one income. This is what that's going to look like. Moving forward, these are the incomes. Let's figure out how much money we're going to need each year just to keep the household running with kids, with a mortgage, with whatever, and see if this is possible. And he might look at it eventually, which I think she would probably appreciate, and say, you know what? This was a fantasy. I don't want to live in this neighborhood, and that's what that's going to mean. And so,
right,
forget it.
Yeah. And I like her idea of like, oh, we could try to do other things to make you feel fulfilled. Or we could think of other careers, which might be, you know, which might make you feel better than this one, but still afford you maybe less of a pay cut, even if it is a pay cut.
Right.
So I like that because it is supportive.
Yes, it is supportive. And it's like, I want you to be happy, it's so important that you're taking interest. So I think I think this person's on the right track in terms of her positive energy and her wanting him to be happy. But I could see it being hard when you're married to a teacher and all summer they're just like totally off, and like a week here and then 2 months later another week, and you're like waking up 6 a.m, drudging to work, and they're just hanging out. Like, I could see why he's tempted to be like, hey, let's do it together.
Right. How come you get to have this? Right. This lifestyle, but not me. And I can maybe there is something that comes out a little bit about that too, which she, I think, might be prepared for. Like, why does she get the job with the better quality of life? And because she does get the buffer of his job, and it sounds like he's kind of taking the brunt of the misery at work for the sake of the family. So I think that's an interesting discussion to have too. It's probably, again, like, I don't think it has to be contentious, but it sounds maybe like it might be a little bit more heated than if they had the same job with the same hours and the same general level of stress. It would probably be less of a thing than, okay, you have this job that you can have because I'm doing this, but I don't want to do this.
Yes. And I think if that happens, she needs to be validating of his feelings and like acknowledging, you know, how hard that must be, that, you know, she's snoozing away and he's waking up and going off to work. And, you know,
teacher, you're really making being a teacher sound very, very relaxing.
Well, for the time that you actually don't have to go in, it's great. No, but I know teachers work so hard. That's why I'm like very impressed that she's so positive about it, because it isn't an easy job when you're there. When you're off, it's great. But yeah, I think communication, and I would sit down and crunch some numbers and see where you guys fall on the reality scale of this. But be a part of it. Be a partner with him. So even if the teacher thing,
maybe she like loves, again, she loves the job, but maybe like, you know, she has the, maybe she could get a summer job so that he could change to a firm with a little bit of a more relaxed energy, like the same job, but a better work-life balance. He makes a little bit less than his cap out there. And she works a little bit more in the summer. Maybe that's the real conversation they need to have of like, can you work a little bit more so I can work a little bit less?
Right. Fair. Yeah, I think that's reasonable. There might be something going on his end where he's kind of like, this isn't exactly the best deal for me. You know, I have to work really hard. And so, yeah, the big picture is when you have this conversation, you have to look at this relationship that you're a team. You want him to be happy. He wants you to be happy. And how can you find the best scenario that's going to maximize that for both of you, and just being super supportive, which I think she already is. So, yeah.
Yeah, love that.
With Mother's Day coming up, I wanted to take a quick moment to appreciate not only the moms, but anyone who's taken on the role of caregiver. You do everything for everyone else. Now it's time to do something for you. Looking at you, eldest daughters, OneSkin has a simple, scientifically validated routine that keeps your skin looking and feeling good while targeting the root cause of aging. For a limited time, you'll get an exclusive 15% off your first OneSkin purchase using the code OVERSHARING when you check out at oneskin.co. You do so much for others. Try OneSkin today and do something good for yourself this Mother's Day. I have tried OneSkin. I've been using it for about 2 months. I love the routine. It's made my skin much smoother, much more supple, and the routine is super simple to do. The secret is OneSkin's proprietary OS1 peptide. In a third-party, double-blind, 12-week clinical study, OS1 Face was clinically proven to strengthen the skin barrier, improve skin health markers, and diminish visible signs of aging. OneSkin is the world's first skin longevity company. By focusing on the cellular aspects of aging, OneSkin keeps your skin looking and acting younger for longer. Get started today with 15% off using code OVERSHARING at oneskin.co. That's 15% off oneskin.co with code OVERSHARING. After you purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them we sent you. We've all been there. You have a question about your credit card, you call the number for help and can't get a hold of anyone. If only you had a Discover card. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right, a real person. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We have a new segment that Dr. Naomi has spearheaded, our intention segment. Do you want to like reiterate what we're doing here, what the goal is?
Sure. So I think a lot of people move through their life kind of putting out this fire and that fire. And, you know, all day you're sort of fighting against these thoughts in your mind that are not making you feel good and are probably not even really true and are not, you know, we don't typically have sort of a North Star that we're like looking at as we're moving through our day. We're just like spiraling and then getting distracted and then spiraling and then getting distracted and not really moving in a direction with intention. So this intention segment, I had asked for people to submit kind of a little summary of their daily mental experience. What are the repeating thoughts that you have during the day? What are the underlying fears that are causing these kind of thought patterns throughout the day? Talking about what are your belief systems about yourself and about the world and about others? And then ultimately, what are your goals for yourself? So I asked people to submit some of that information so that we, Jordana, you and I, can help them create an intention so that when you have a moment of mindfulness, right? A moment of mindfulness is just a moment where you are pulling yourself out of your trance of worry or your trance of rumination or your trance of pattern thinking and saying, okay, I have my intention. It's like a mantra kind of thing. I have my intention. I'm ready. I'm going to return to my intention when I catch myself getting into this trance of like automated behavior and thinking. And I think if you can do that throughout your day, it really can set you moving through moment by moment to a particular goal that you have for yourself. So somebody submitted something and hopefully we can come up with a kind of a guiding statement that they can tell themselves as they catch themselves in their pattern thinking throughout the day.
Love that. Do you want to read the email?
Sure, I'll read it. Okay. Hey, Jordana and Dr. Naomi, love the podcast and all the great advice you both give each week. I was listening to this week's episode in the middle of a pretty anxious, stressful week, so I figured now is the time to finally write in when you mentioned working on intentions for a listener. Sorry if it's too long. Some background. I've struggled with anxiety my whole life, but more recently was able to put a name to it. I was in therapy for about a year and felt like it was such a life-changing experience for me. In May, my therapist and I decided I no longer needed the weekly sessions, and up until this month, I felt like I was doing well and using the tools I gained over the course of our year together. I know I can always reach out to her, but I feel like I want to try to work through things on my own a little before reaching back out. My main issues have been about work. I've had a new job for about 7 months and deal with people a lot. I'm a pediatric speech therapist, so lots of kids and parents. Working with kids has always been the natural part for me, but I find myself still getting anxious about dealing with the parents. I've been in the field for 7 years, and this month, a few little comments have really derailed me. I feel like my pattern thoughts are, so here we go, always going to the worst case scenario. For example, work, one little comment means the parent hates me or doesn't want to work with me. In personal life, if my fiance doesn't answer a text right away, I worry if something happened to him, etc. Logically, I know these things aren't usually true, but I just can't stop myself. These are things that dissipated a bit during therapy, but have ebbed and flowed throughout my life. My pattern behavior is absolutely avoidance. I will do anything to avoid a conflict or even an awkward moment or possible interaction I feel worried about. I feel like I've really worked on being self-aware and have worked on dealing with emotions and issues head-on, but it's just who I am. There's a belief, right? I don't know if she meant to put that in there, but I don't know if my fear is the worst case scenario coming true or having someone give feedback I feel like I can't handle. My goal is to be able to let the little comments go and shift my thoughts when I start to ruminate or think the worst is going to happen. I could really use some help coming up with an intention to help me get through this rough patch. I appreciate your perspective so much and really enjoy the work that you do. Sincerely, Anxious Betch.
Okay. What do you think?
So I think, and a lot of people struggle with this. I don't know if you've ever had this experience, but I do have a lot of people that have this kind of underlying social anxiety where they will replay a conversation that they had with somebody over in their head and think about something they said and how it made the other person perceive them and fearful of judgments of other people. Yeah. And those can get very looped.
I get that, especially when I'm drinking. Or if I have drank the night before, I get that. It's like
what did I say?
Right. What did I say? Or I remember saying that the other person is that, I don't know if that's something I would normally say. Is that, how did the other person think about what I'm saying? So definitely relate to that.
Yeah. So I think there's a big piece in terms of, because she said her number one issue is work and sort of ruminating about these interactions with parents. So I think that's something that she probably needs to be mindful of, just kind of, you know, we talk about changing the neural pathways. So like the more you think a thought, the more easy it is for you to think that thought. You know, it's like grinding out like a, you know, a pathway in the dirt with a truck. The more you go over that same path, the easier it is going to be for your car to kind of groove into that thought pattern. So I think what she's noticing is that, you know, she wants to try to steer away from those ruminations about what other people think about her and allowing those other people's thoughts to change her perception of herself. So that was one that I saw.
Or this worst case scenario thing, is that a separate one? The where yes. She thinks of the worst possible outcome of an interaction?
Totally. So the worst case scenario thing, I think, is a big thing for a lot of people where something happens and they automatically want to like prepare themselves for the worst case scenario by worrying about it and feeling like if I worry about this, then I'll sort of be prepared if this thing happens and maybe it won't, it will affect me less, which is kind of, you know, cognitive error. You know, it's sort of like if we prepare ourselves, it doesn't mean it's going to, like people that write in that they're afraid that their boyfriend's going to break up with them or their girlfriend's going to break up with them. It's like you getting ready and braced for that isn't going to really, it's still going to suck when it happens. And it probably is going to create that thing happening by you being constantly anxious about it.
Right. For that worst case scenario bit, I do understand. I mean, her seem a little drastic where she's like worried if he didn't answer her text that something happened to him or that.
Right.
I mean, maybe worrying that the parent hates you is like a more realistic.
Right.
A realistic worst case scenario situation. But I do find there's like, there is in my head, and maybe this is wrong, a balance between I do feel like you are a lot more disappointed when your expectations are high. So like, or when you have like, when you haven't considered any negative possibility, you know, like let's say you go on a first date and you're like, I'm really excited about this first date. And I like, I feel 100% sure we that had such a great time. Like we're definitely going out again. And then you don't go out again. Like I can see why that feels maybe worse. Like I would say that does feel worse than like, I had a great time. I'm not sure if he likes me. I'm not really sure. I guess we'll see.
Right. I think what happens is a lot of times, like you're going to feel whatever you're going to feel, right? If you feel like there was a connection and you feel like the person liked you and they were giving you good vibes and you liked them back, the rest of it is just like talking yourself out of it. You know, it's almost like you're not going to let yourself get excited. You're going to like stifle that part of yourself with your own like mental chatter that's going to tell you don't get excited. It might not happen, which I guess is fine in some respects, but we've talked about this before. What I think ends up happening, and I'll challenge you on this, is that that initial burst of, you know, he says, you get the text saying, I don't think we're a match, right? That initial thing is going to be stronger if you were like, oh my God, I was so sure that he liked me. So for those first like minute or 5 minutes or whatever it is, there's, I think you're going to feel a little bit worse. But the overall, like the next day or 2 days or the long-term effects of it, I don't think are going to be so different based on whether or not you've allowed yourself to think positively about an interaction. I think there's going to be that initial piece of like, oh, I feel blindsided, right?
Yeah.
But blindsided is almost like, even if you think about what it means, like as an analogy, it means like you got smacked across the face without, when you weren't looking.
Right.
But that's like just the negative piece of that is like this instant, like we always talk about just like, okay, that hurt, that stung, I'm in it. This is what I feel right now. Patiently kind of waiting for that feeling to pass and then coming back and being like, all right, nothing in my life is so different today than it was 2 days ago before I went on this date. Like everything is exactly the same. Yes, there was that initial cortisol pumping through my bloodstream and like all these like excitability hormones that feel like really stressful. You feel nauseous or you feel like you your face is welling up with tears. You want to cry. All that stuff is going to happen. And it's going to kind of run its course through your body. But the ultimate end of it, I don't think is... So maybe you want to protect yourself against that moment. But my challenge for all the listeners out there is just be like, all right, I know how to deal with that moment. I've dealt with it before. I'm not going to die from, you know, the 10 minutes of rush of sadness or disappointment or rejection or whatever. Like, I can handle that. So... do I not allow myself to get excited about somebody because I'm protecting myself from that instant flood of emotions that feels really crappy, but it's short-lived if you let it be short-lived. If you turn it into, I'm never going to find anyone, I must be not ugly, no one. Now, instead of being 10 minutes, now it's 10 days of self-loathing and a story that you're writing about it and the whole thing.
Mine is more like, oh, after I'm like, oh, you're so delusional. Like, do you even have a grasp on reality? Like, are you thinking of the, you know what I mean? Like, are you so naive? Like, I think that's almost like the way that I would beat myself up. Like, you don't know how to read a situation or like, you don't have a self-awareness.
Yes.
Which, I mean, again, it's probably just a different form of that.
Right. Yeah. For her, if we get back to this writer if she's kind of like, if I don't overanalyze the comment that I said to this person, if I just trust myself, and that's where some of the intentions that I wrote down for this listener come in. If I just trust myself and I just believe that I'm a good person and I'm trying my best and I'm well educated in my field, maybe I will, if somebody else feels differently, then I'm like some delusional, like, laughing stock.
Right.
Which I think you're putting a lot of energy protecting yourself against something that probably isn't true. You know, like, even if you went on a date and you connected, you thought you connected and he didn't, it doesn't mean that you're like some delusional loser. It just means like you felt a spark and he didn't.
Right. And it's kind of almost like the idea that you would even think that about yourself means that it's very unlikely to be the actual case scenario.
Yes.
Because people who are truly delusional or truly lack any self-awareness, and I'm sure we can all think of like one or two people like that, they're never saying to themselves, like,
right.
They're never doubting their self-awareness. That's why they can act that way.
Right. So maybe the fear is of turning into that person. But like right. you said, if you're having the initial automatic thought, and that is something I will tell this listener and all people, most of the time, as you're making this change, you can't control having that initial thought of like, oh my God, I shouldn't have said that or whatever. That's going to happen quick. It's going to be automatic. There's nothing you can do about it. But what you can do is what you do with the moment after. Mm-hmm. You recognize you had this thought, this pattern thought. Now you're like, okay, I'm heading towards the rut in the mud. Do I want to keep going in that direction and keep carving out the same pathway of negative thinking? Or do I want to take a step to the left, come back to my intention and start carving out a new pathway? So the automatic thought is just going to happen. There's really not much we can do about it. But then you have the option and the choice to make, to create a space and choose a new pathway of thought.
So what's her intention?
So I wrote down a few that I think might be helpful for her. One is, I intend to trust my own goodness and abilities. So when she comes to this moment, the goodness is like, I'm doing the right thing for this child. And right. the abilities is like, I know how to do it, right? Like, I want to do it and I know how to do it. So I think when she comes to this moment of like, this parent thinks that I don't know what I'm talking about, or this parent doesn't like me, or this parent doesn't think that I'm helpful, to come back to this intention of, I intend to trust my own goodness and abilities. And that's a choice. I intend to trust myself. That's a choice that she has to make. There's nothing that anybody's going to say or do that's going to put her in that right. place.
Yeah.
She has to make that choice for herself. And then I have another one for the part that's like her fear of the worst case scenario. Like you said, that's kind of a separate issue. And that one, and a lot of people can probably benefit from this, is, I intend to accept life's unknowns by appreciating the safety that I do have. So it's almost like there's a lot of unknowns. There's a lot of things that you don't know how they're going to turn out. You want to meet a partner. You want to have a baby. You want to, you're afraid something's going to happen to somebody you love. There's that part of you that's like, yeah, I don't know. My boyfriend could get hit by a car on the way home from work. And that could theoretically be the reason why he's not answering me, but I'm going to just accept that that's not something I can control and come back to appreciation of the things that I do have, the safety that I do have in my life, whatever, you know, that might be in that moment.
I like that a lot.
Yeah. Because everybody has like some safeties. They have food, they have shelter,
family,
they have
friends,
family,
job,
best friend. Yeah. yeah. So if you can just steer, yes, I don't know what's going to turn out here, but I kind of have a good feeling of what's going to turn out here.
Right.
Like, I know that, like, when I come home, my house is going to be there. I know that when I come home, my husband's going to be there. If, like, if you're trying to have a baby and that's something that's not, you don't know if that's going to work out. Well, I know that I have my partner, or I don't have my partner, but I know that my friends are going to be there. What, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Those are the two? Are there?
I mean, I have a bunch, but I don't want to bore everybody with all of them unless you want to hear a couple others.
No, we definitely can. Going back to the one you had, the first one you had, it reminded me of this scene, which I thought, but can we repeat the first one?
I intend to trust my goodness and my abilities.
My abilities, right. This reminds me of this. For some reason, I always think of this scene in the show 6 Feet Under on HBO. And one of the scenes, the aunt says to like the daughter who's like in art school, she said she's complaining about something in art school. And she goes, well, maybe you're not an artist. And then the girl gets very, very angry at her. And she gets very upset. She's like, why would you say that I'm not an artist? And she said, well, why are you so upset that I'm saying that you're not an artist? If I said that you were purple, you would just laugh at me and say, I know I'm not purple. But like, if you're angry, it's because you don't believe you're an artist.
Yes. Yes. Well, that leads me to another one that I wrote down, which is, I intend to perceive myself through my own experience. So okay. Like not allowing other people's perception of me. I live in my body. I know what I think. I know what I feel. I know my own conscience. I know my own intentions. I know me better. I'm with myself all day. So to allow your sense of self to come from someone outside of you is like very irrational.
Right.
Kind of like, especially if we're, I mean, maybe if you're talking about like, am I pretty or am I, you know, something that's very external and has nothing to do with you knowing your own mind and your own heart. Okay, fine. Maybe you can do that. But as far as like knowing your own character, nobody knows your character better than you. You're with yourself all day. So that one, it reminded me of that. The idea of like, why are you letting your aunt's perception of whether or not you're an artist, you know, whether or not.
Right.
That's
within you.
And if
you don't, that's what you work on is like you having faith in your own, like you said, abilities and
right.
who you are.
Along those lines, I had another one. I intend to become aware of others' voice in my mind and come back to my own. So a lot of people will, you don't even realize how often your own like mental monologue is really the voice of somebody else that's kind of seeping into your psyche. So just becoming aware, what is a voice that I've heard in my past and someone else that's kind of trying to influence me in some way, and what is my own? So just being aware of that and then coming back to what is my own voice. I know that I'm trying to help these kids. I know that I'm doing the best I can. I know that I'm researching the best protocols and trying to implement them in the best way possible.
Right.
You know, for this speech pathologist in specific.
I like that a lot. She gave her a few, that's, I think she could pick any one of these. And obviously they're like related to each other. So it just really right. would resonate with the writer herself or anyone else who's listening. Because I think, I mean, I'm listening and I'm kind of like, I could use that. Those are definitely helpful because I mean, it's very hard. Do you feel like there are some people who just never doubt themselves or who have a, you know, such a, besides yourself, obviously, because you meditate.
Oh no, I doubt myself, but yeah.
Who deal with, I mean, I think everyone could use some sort of phrase that brings them back to what they want, no matter how well life is going.
Totally. And the truth is, if you're not like, that's what it's reminders. We are not wired. I've said this on here before. We're wired to worry. We're wired to doubt. We're wired to be afraid. So if we are not constantly practicing, that's, you know, one of the things I like about religion is the religiosity of it. The like, okay, every whatever, I'm going to pray, which is like creating an intention and repeating it and reminding yourself of something, mm-hmm. whether it's whatever you believe it is. I'm going to go to church every Sunday and I'm going to be reminded of like, what am I trying to do here? So I think the only people that don't need that are the ones that are already having constant reminders. I don't think anybody can just left to their own human mind and body. You're not going to be able to do it because our minds and bodies are not really designed for peace and calm. They're designed for like protection and we're sort of fear-based. That's our survival instinct.
Yeah.
So if you're not constantly reminding yourself, then you're probably not going to feel this way. I don't think any, even like all the self-actualized leaders and gurus in the world are that way because they're constantly reminding themselves to be that way.
Right. Know? It's like almost you would think it's not because they need it. It's because they already do it.
Yes.
It's like, why does Coca-Cola advertise? It's not because they need it. It's so that they stay. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's not because they need it because yes. they need to get further in life or further in business than they already are. It's so that they can like, Stay
where they are. 100%. No, I totally agree. I like that analogy. So we gave her a few. If you're listening, I'd love to hear, you know, write in and just let us know which one, you know, and that's what, like with these intentions, I like people to kind of throw a few against the wall and then see which ones stick. A secondary practice is kind of like writing it down, almost like, you know, like that chalkboard repeating, like, you know, when you're in detention and you write down the same thing.
Yes.
You know, like, I will not throw spitballs or you know, whatever it is.
And writing it down to your head.
Yes. Or sometimes what people, like a lot of people do these adult coloring book kind of things. Like, so even just like, write, if you're artistic, like writing it down in like a pretty font and coloring it in and making it something that you can like spend an hour just kind of focusing on this thing so that when you get in this place, you're like, okay, back to my intention. What am I trying to do with myself here?
Something that I also worked on, like a even like a business coach, where it's like maybe like confidence in meetings or something, where I put in my notes app, if we come up with like an intention or like kind of like an affirmation in that way together before I go in.
Yes.
I look at that. It's a little reminder. It's like, again, strengthening the neural pathway there. If you're not artistic, like I am, like me.
You're like, I'm not coloring.
Exactly. But I thought that was great. If you guys liked the segment, if you didn't like the segment, if you have any thoughts, if you have your own intention that you want us to create for you or suggestion, email oversharing@betches.com, oversharing@betches.com. And I like the segment. I think it could be really helpful. I'm going to take one of those with me through the day.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
All right, let's do some triggered.
Let's do it. You want to read the first one?
Okay. My boyfriend lives at home and I sometimes end up staying over and working from his house as I'm a remote worker. His dad likes to make comments about how I'm stealing money from my company by not going into the office, or says, "Wow, looks like you're working really hard," and then laughs when I go into the kitchen to get a glass of water. I work hard and there is no reason to need an office in my line of work. I even got promoted this year, which he knows. Not that I should have to prove anything to him. How triggered should I be? Yeah. Well, she's confident in her own abilities, as we said with the intention.
I was thinking the same thing. This is an example of, like, you know what the reality is here. You know what you're doing all day. You're sitting at your desk with your own brain doing your own thing. You know what you're doing. So it really shouldn't bother. I do think it's rude and condescending, so I will put that out there. But as far as triggering, you know what you're doing. And you're actually saving your company money, by the way, by not having them pay for an office for you. So when he says you're stealing money by not going into the office.
Yeah. To me, that's clearly like a projection of maybe like a way that he feels about the fact that he never was able to do that. And so that's how he's justified that in his mind, is like tried to make it that he is better than someone who doesn't do that.
Right. Yeah. I think it does sound like there's a little bit of a jealousy thing. It's funny because it starts at such a young age. I'm just going to sidetrack for a second. So this morning, Brooks was telling me, my son, he's four, about this girl in his class who was not nice to him. And he said they were at circle time and he was like touching something. And the girl said, called out in front of the whole class and said, "He's touching whatever the thing was that he wasn't supposed to be touching."
And you were like, "I'll kill her."
Kind of. But I was saying, well, she probably was like snitching on you because she wanted to touch that thing. And she was thinking, hey, it's not fair that you get to touch it and I can't touch it. So I'm going to tell the teacher so that we'll make you not be able to touch that thing. So he had this moment of kind of like, oh, you're right. Like, I think she was jealous.
It's not about me.
Yeah. It's not about me. It's about her wanting to also touch that thing. So, or being jealous of me or whatever it is. So it's interesting that it's, you know, this father-in-law is the, you know, the snitch from the preschool.
Yeah. And again, I can understand why maybe he feels like his life could have been so different if he didn't have to go into whatever totally. His 9 to 5 was. It's probably something that, you know, you could feel resentful about. I remember in COVID, because I have a very different job than Mike. Mike is an accountant. So he's like at his desk all day, like knees deep in spreadsheets, just like hammering it out. And I have a more creative job. So my job is a little bit less like, oh, I'm at the desk all day. It's like I record a podcast. It's like a creative job. I record a podcast. I'm in a creative meeting every now and then. But I do have downtime between that. And I'm also my own boss. And I remember in COVID, when we were working in the same apartment, he would make a few of those comments like, oh, busy day or something like that.
Yeah.
And eventually I was like, do you feel like there's something that I'm not doing? Like, is there something like about my work schedule that you feel is personally offensive to you?
Right. Right.
And I did get it. And he never made another comment again. So
you showed him.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's funny. Jealousy is a tough emotion, you know, when you want something and someone that's right in your face has the same thing that you wanted, or maybe with this father-in-law. I mean, look, he's home in the middle of the day too. So I don't know if he's retired or what, and he's just regretting his whole career when he was working. But when someone has something that you want and they're enjoying it right in front of your face, it is sometimes hard to not feel jealous. But I think you kind of nicely, very kindly pointing that out to him probably made him aware of like, all right, jealousy isn't a great emotion, especially when it comes to my partner, you know?
Yes, exactly. And then we all went back to the office, and now I don't have to feel like a big watch. all right, let's do one more.
All right, let's do one more.
Okay. Hey, Naomi and Jordana, for some background, I'm currently getting my master's in engineering while simultaneously working as an intern at a local firm. So it's safe to say my schedule is very tight. I don't have a car, but I live in a smallish college town that's barely walkable. So I bike literally everywhere because I figure it's the quickest way to get around as opposed to sitting in traffic in the city bus or an Uber. Well, this morning I come out of my apartment around 6 a.m. to go to the gym before work. My gym is just a block from work, so it makes sense to go there on the way, and see that my bike has been stolen. I then proceed to start hysterically crying because I'm freaking out about being late for work because I have no way to get there or to the gym. I also can't really think straight unless I exercise first, so I wasn't in the best state of mind to begin with. I call my mom as I'm having a full-blown panic attack, now back inside my apartment. I'm absolutely hysterical and crying about how I'm so unbelievably busy and how this has just offset my whole day and that I'm 100 times more stressed out. I end up getting a ride to work, I have amazing friends, and I was able to calm down, still pissed off, but calm and more mindful. Now, here's my triggered scenario. A few hours later, I get a text from my roommate saying that when I was crying to my mom, I woke her up, and that I should be more mindful about the echoes in the halls. She didn't ask if I was feeling okay or anything, which felt very insensitive. Of course, I try and be mindful of the noise I make when I'm up at 5 in the morning, but personally, if I'm having a panic attack, I don't have the mental capacity to think about anything else. How triggered should I be? Signed, a stressed betch.
Oh, this is, I feel for her that I've been in that situation where you're like on a timeline and then something just totally doesn't go your way and it sets you off.
Seems like she's was very like tightly wired before this happened. And then it truly
was the straw that broke the camel's back kind of thing. I think this depends on how often she's having these panic attacks and crying loudly in the apartment.
Yeah, that's a good point. As I'm saying, on the other hand, I'm like, I can understand where it's like 5:30 a.m. And I'm like,
right.
If it's one time and her bike was stolen, I feel like obviously that's kind of like an insensitive thing for the roommate. If she's frequently kind of like having a little mental breakdown in the morning and she can hear it,
yes,
I could kind of get why she'd be asked her to keep it down. Can you cry outside?
When you're crying hysterically loudly, sobbing on the phone with your mother, can you please try to like
go outside,
be mindful of the echoes? I do think this depends on how often this is happening. If this was a one-time thing where she happened to have this like freak out, like anyone, I mean, if it was a stranger like howling loudly, you know, through the walls, I would wake up with concern, you know, like if it was a random person that I didn't even know that was like sobbing uncontrollably, I would be concerned even if it was 4 o'clock in the morning. So if this was a one-off, I could see, but it almost sounds like this is maybe something that happens more frequently.
She's like, a typical Monday morning.
I don't know. If this is a one-off, I could see how you're like, you didn't come to check and see if I was okay, like with all the noise that was happening. But if she's kind of like, oh, she's crying loudly to her mom again, like this is really getting annoying. Yeah.
Maybe she picked a bad day to do it. If that, like, maybe she didn't know. I don't know if she knew that the bike was stolen. That is an upsetting thing. But I agree. If she never does that and she had a, like this one morning, I can see this would be like a 7,
right,
or something. But if she's doing it every week, then I think it would be a lot lower.
Right. Yeah, I agree. I think, like, you know, my kids come in, just for example, today, they come in frequently during the night, you know, early in the morning, first thing, or like in the middle of the night, and they're just like crying about something. And I'm just like, what is it? You know, like after a while, I'm like, what's the matter? Like, I'm not like,
boy, you
matching,
cry wolf.
I'm not matching their like intensity of emotion. And I'm sort of like, right, just tired of it.
If you had a kid that was like, always very calm and quiet, yes, whatever, and then you heard them screaming one morning,
yes,
you would be like, oh my God, what's going on? Like, how can I help?
I would jump, yeah, out of bed and be like matching their intensity of emotion and kind of really leaning in, like in a, I would be mimicking their panic. But when it's,
yeah,
if it's happening a lot, I'm kind of like, all right, what is it today? What's the,
right,
what's the big thing?
Well, people react to like whatever your baseline is. So,
right. Totally. So if this was a one-off and you were crying, and then she says, when you're crying loudly to your mom, can you please be mindful of the echoes? That I would give like an 8. If this is something that happens with frequency, I would say it would be a much lower triggered score.
Yeah. And I would work for this writer maybe on trying to do things to de-stress, because it does sound like she's,
yes,
kind of living on the edge of like, if, and I'm not saying a bike being stolen is very upsetting, so I'm not, mm-hmm, trying to minimize, mm-hmm, that, but if you're living on an edge where anything is kind of gonna like set you off, you might want to like look at where you can try to de-stress in your life,
totally,
maybe, or move some responsibilities, yeah, around,
checking priorities and prioritizing some self-care. And yeah, I would agree with that.
Well, that's it for Triggered. Thank you guys for listening. Again, if you have a voicemail, you want to call in 646-363-6294. Thank you so much for all your reviews. The reviews are, I read them all, as you know, and most of them are so positive and really, really nice. And it's so nice to see them. And anyone who DMs me about the show, I also get really happy about that. So if you like the show, leave us a 5-star review on Apple or Spotify and keep writing in.
All right. I hope we help some people today. That's our time.
Great work today.
Oversharing is produced by Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales-Picot, and Rebecca Sowes-McCann. Editing by Basilio Perez. Guest booking by Ali Friedlander. Send your advice emails to oversharing@betches.com or leave us a voicemail at 646-363-6294.
Thank you to our sponsor, First Response. A lot of us test more than once. That's why First Response created the Triple Check Pregnancy Test Kit, which includes 3 different tests all in one box. The kit includes the early results pregnancy test, 1 digital pregnancy test, plus 1 rapid result pregnancy test that gives you fast results in just 1 minute on the day of your missed period or any day thereafter. Each test in the kit offers a different way to learn your results, so when the time comes, you feel as confident as possible. All First Response pregnancy test products are available for purchase at all major retailers in-store and online. Be sure to pick one up today.
Betches.